Welcome to the latest edition of
He Said,
She Said. We are coming to you today from a beautiful St. Petersburg after a really successful weekend for our family.
Yes, it was Ella Joyce's first horse show with Biscuit.
That's our first horse show ever and our first horse show ever.
Yeah, we're a horse family. I mean, it was hashtag horse life all weekend long in the beautiful Lady Lake, which is right outside of the Villages. We'll have some interesting commentary on that.
I cannot believe I finally set foot in the Villages, and whew, it's much more than I ever dreamed it could be.
I mean, that's,
and I can't wait to retire there one day.
It is a busy week
in my souped up golf cart.
In politics, the impeachment trial is underway with bombshells breaking almost every hour. John Bolton's book is
Bolton's book is just a game changer here, right?
It could be. We'll wait to see if
Republicans get any spine.
If they want to call more witnesses. The presidential primary is on its most interesting timeline. Iowa coming up in a week, New Hampshire right after that. The debate in between that. Florida came into focus this weekend with Mike Bloomberg here. So we're going to have Kevin Kate come on. He's working with Tom Steyer. We'll talk a little bit about the Democratic primary and what's going on there. And then in Florida, it's the middle of legislative session, the third week. I ask you, please sign up for Sunburn. You can do that at floridapolitics.com. You can sign up for our emails. We basically have an email jumping out at you at all times. We've got the morning email, evening email, takeaways from Tallahassee on Saturday, brunch on Sunday. And so the best way to stay on top of Florida politics is at floridapolitics.com. And we were able to do that this weekend at the horse show. So, honey, set the stage where we were at this weekend, because it was really beautiful. It was a great event.
At Horse Shows in the Park at the Grand Oaks Resort, and we are blessed to have an incredible family at our horse stable. We the girls on the team are all just such lovely girls, and it's a whole weekend event. You know, Ella didn't go to school on Friday because we had to get up early and get up there to make sure our horse was okay from his transit from the barn to Lady Lake and make sure he's comfortable in his stall. And you got to make sure you give him lots of love, and then you have to school him. The horse and the rider both need some practice in the rings. They're going to show in for the weekend. And
I was impressed with, again, it's first one, so very impressed with all that went into it. Like, you say these things like, well, the horse has got to get there. Well, it's got to be trailered, and
it started on Thursday, if we're being really honest. You know, Thursday is when everybody was there packing up the barn. Everybody's washing their horses, grooming them one last time before the braider comes in and braids them all overnight. And the horses,
that was amazing. Like
the braids that they have to have for the show.
And there's little biscuits.
Only the hunters, the jumpers do not get braided.
But there was 30 intricate braids on
Little Biscuit's mane.
I mean, that was beautiful. Biscuit, by the way, you know, honestly, I haven't got to see him as much. Let me cap off all of this by saying
Peter is severely allergic to horses.
And we kind like of discovered
the thing
this.
That he is the most allergic to is horses. So he does not get to spend a lot of time. He's never at the barn. He's met Biscuit twice.
Right. And we knew this. When Michelle and I were first dating, we would do the horse and carriage rides in St. Augustine. And then when Ella was born, we would do that still. And then a couple years ago, I noticed my throat was closing up, and I'm like, wait a second, I'm allergic to horses. We kind of knew that was out there. I went out 6 months ago to the stable, and just, it was 2 days of an attack. And so went to the allergist, did all the testing last week, and I'm more allergic to horses than anything else, more so than dust mites, cats, and other things that I'm allergic to. So I loaded up steroids, all sorts of things. I don't get to see Biscuit as often. And I finally got to see Biscuit kind of I got to walk. I mean, I just knew that I was going to have a bad day. So I just, you know, loaded myself up and dealt with it. And, you know, I got to walk Biscuit. So I got to see, you know, just what a beautiful pony Biscuit is.
And what a sweet personality he
has. Sweet personality, very gentle. Just a very perfect horse for Ella Joyce. And it was nice to be
around. Would you say he was heaven sent?
I would say he was, yes. And then secondly, I was amazed. When we got up to the resort, beautiful sprawling property, set up for this, for all sorts of horse shows and for staging for horse shows. You need a lot of space for all the trailers, for all the stables that get temporarily set up and everything like that. It was quite a to do. Like it was very impressive.
It was, there was definitely a lot going on, and this has all kind of been, you know, we've been flying by the seat of our pants. You know, Ella has been riding. It was 13 months yesterday since her first horseback riding lesson. And, you know, we knew that eventually she would want to show. We did not ever envision that we would own a horse. And so we have really been, since we purchased Biscuit in October, I have been trying to learn. You know, I've just been learning by being immersed in it. And
you did an amazing, all right, you're, as typical, underselling yourself. You were horse mom extraordinaire. You have been tacking up Biscuit. You know, you've been putting on the saddle.
Well, that's our job.
Yeah, but, well, a lot of times that's usually dad, you know, but you are out there sometimes stepping in horse crap or
shoveling manure shoveling all the shit. Time. You shoveling shit all the time.
You know, and so
my shoulders might be burning a little bit today from all the shit I shoveled this weekend, but that's okay.
Anybody that thinks that you're, you know, wearing Chanel shoes or whatever. No, you had your boots on and you were.
That's why I wore my Chanel shoes today, because I spent the whole weekend in muck boots. And I was just like, I want to feel like a girl again. Yeah. But yeah.
No, you were out there. You knew your stuff. You know.
No, you know what it is I know when to ask for help, because I'm not afraid to admit that I don't know things. So unfortunately, we have a lot of other great barn parents and great trainers there who really help, have really, really helped a lot. Judy, the head trainer at our barn, is just incredible. And she has been so helpful with Biscuit and with Ella. And she's, you know, I'm just grateful to have these people in Ella's life, because it's, you know, it's not just about the horses. It's about the confidence. But it's all the lessons she's learning. You know, caring for an animal that requires so much care is really great for an only child.
There's, although I would say there's this incredible barn and horse family that was with us. Like that group was tight.
Yeah.
It was nice. I think it was something 30, like 30 people. I know it was 30 people.
We all stayed at the same hotel.
Oh.
It was 38 people at dinner that night, babe. And yeah, 38 people at dinner. Poor Peter. I think that his head was going to pop off. We went to this.
I don't do group dinners like that. It was a little much. It was a little much. That's okay. But that's part of it. Also, there's a big contrast between being, you know, dance parents, which is we're just going to a hotel. Different. It's all set up. Go dance in a room.
Right.
This is, you got to rent a golf cart and you're, you know, over here.
Because the property is so huge. And like our horse. One of the things I didn't know and I was not prepared for is when on show day, it doesn't just matter when you show, the horses all leave the barn at a certain time because you don't want them to walk alone to the showgrounds ever.
I was wondering why we were up there so early.
Because they didn't want Biscuit to be left alone in the barn, and they also didn't want him walking alone because there's so many things to spook them, and horses are herd animals. So we had to do a lot of standing around with Biscuit, trying to keep him from grazing, because if he grazed too much, then he'd be too lazy when it was his time to ride and show, while other horses from our barn and other girls from our team were riding. And, you know, so you had the golf cart, because that meant I had to bring all of his tack with me, because I couldn't have him tacked up for 2 hours waiting to show. So, you know, I had to load up his saddle, his saddle pad, his reins, and then Ella's show clothes, because you can't have kids standing around in their show clothes all the time and expect them not to get dirty before they show. So it was a lot to load up. So that's why we had to have the golf carts too.
I'm going back to just like the whole weekend when, and little parts, like it's important to remember as we're talking about this, Ella can, and you've made this point several times outside of this, Ella can be great. She can be prepared. We can be prepared. We're still dealing with a horse. This is not dance.
It's not dance. It was a totally different thing. It was much more nerve-wracking for me because Ella can only control so much. You know, you prepare your athlete as best as you can, and Ella has been getting all the lessons she needs. She's been really working hard. She has done everything she can to put in her best performance. But there's another athlete involved, her teammate, which is her horse. And horses are finicky, and some horses just have off days.
Oh, there's part. I saw horses yesterday. It's time to trot, and they don't want to trot.
Yep, they're just not having it.
And there's nothing you can do.
Round is out.
Yep.
Or you're jumping your horse, and the horse just gets the jump and just refuses it. And you get a second chance, but the horse refuses it again, and you're disqualified.
There was an incident where, very small thing, but like a teammate of ours was ready to go, and something happened with the schedule, which is very in flux for everybody. The horse was ready to go. Then they pulled the horse back. Horse wasn't ready to go when.
Then they basically put the horse on ice for 30 minutes. And then the horse was tired and wasn't ready to go.
Yeah.
It had to be exercised again. So it was just, and that's no fault of the rider. It's no fault of the horse at that point. It's just a scheduling thing. And it's all things that we're learning. But it was an amazing weekend. I never thought I would pay so much attention to feet in my life. And
can we talk about the villages yet?
Well, should we just say how Ella did in her first show?
Oh, do we want to? Okay.
Oh, you want to talk about the villages?
No. I didn't know. Like, usually, I didn't know if that was going to be one of those things where you were going to, like, shut me down because I shouldn't say it or.
Oh, no, you can say it. If you notice, I'm not saying our stable and stuff.
Like, okay.
I don't think people need to know where our horse is or where we were.
And it's important to remind people maybe that are tuning into us for the first time. Biscuit is a gift from Papa Ben.
It was his dying wish.
When he was. Before he died, he put aside money for Ella Joyce and gave us instructions to get her a horse. He knew that was important for her. I love him so much because now we're taking care of a horse and all that goes, you know, as anybody who owns a horse, I think about Rick Wilson, who warned me about his daughter that it's the most expensive hobby.
Sport, not hobby.
Right.
It is an Olympic sport.
Right. Oh, I don't doubt that at all. He had said his advice to me had been. But throughout the weekend, we were reminded of it because Biscuit, you have to have a formal name as he's being entered. And he was
Papa's Disney Biscuit is his show name.
And so Papa was there with us just throughout the weekend. We drove by his exits on the way up to Ocala or Lady Lake. Coco was with us.
My father had a farm. I was born on a farm in Brooksville.
Coco did a great job.
My mom is Coco, and Coco was with us.
Walking, I mean, she did a lot of the
grazing with Biscuit
for us. So that was, we didn't get her into the stall too much. We're going to have to get her to cross that threshold.
Okay.
But she did a great job. Really helping us with Biscuit on that one. It was really nice to have her along. So Ella competed on 2 days, Saturday and Sunday. It's four competitions in her class, right?
She had four different events in her class each day.
So she's competing, and Michelle and I are like, I don't even want to watch. I'm walking the other way because I just can't watch. I can't watch my daughter compete.
And it's so subjective also.
Right.
I mean, here's the truth. There's one judge. And while you know what your child is supposed to do, it doesn't matter. You know, the judge is the judge. And you don't know what they want your kid to do. And also, Ella had a male equestrian in her class. And that's very, very rare. There are not a lot of boy riders at horse shows, and so that's always quite the novelty, and judges love that because, you know, Ella was only competing against kids about her age. She was in a beginner class.
I also did not like, and just this, just a note, I mean, this is he said, she said, and we talk about parenting. I know the competition road is such a slippery slope, I'm holding off competition as long as we can, because I know that I don't want her to live or die by the tenth of a point from a judge that she's never seen before.
Right.
And
that's kind of what we kept prepping her for. And part of me was, I was walking a fine line on Friday and Saturday when we were talking about what to expect, because I didn't want her to feel like I was discouraging her and that I didn't think she could win first place, because Ella is a Schorsch, so she wanted first place. I wanted to prep her for the fact that she could do everything right and it could still not go her way. And it's a fine line as a parent, right? You don't want it to all be about the end result. You want it to be partially about the experience. And you also, you know, you don't want your kid's soul to be crushed, because for me, it's all about confidence building for our daughter right now. And I had to keep reminding her that there's two athletes that have to do their very best job, you and your horse. And as amazing as your horse is, and as much as mommy and daddy and papa invested to make sure that you had the best partner in this experience to show, you can only do so much, and judges are very subjective, and everything's not going to go your way, which kind of, quite honestly, is a good lesson for an only child.
Isn't that what parenting, not the truest test of parenting, because I think a parent's dealing with much more grave situations, but it is such a test of your parenting, how your child competes one way or the other. That is just such the, how she's going to act. And it's not necessarily a reflection of you.
Right.
But it's, that's like where you have to have a clear definition. You have to have a clear philosophy as parents. Like, we have to be on the same page.
Right.
Like, if you're like, no, son of a bitch, she's going to finish first. And I'm like, actually, I really don't care. I just want her to have we have said her motto from day one. And we have said this to her since she was a baby, which her motto is, take your time, concentrate, do your best. That was when she was walking up and down the stairs. That was her motto.
Crawling up and down the stairs.
And like, we still say that to her, you know, just take your time, concentrate, and do your best. And everything else will work out. We're not worried about whether or not you finish first or not. That said.
Ooh. This is stressful, guys. It's stressful. I mean, like, I almost threw up. And her first event that she competed in, she got second place, and my mom started crying. Yeah. She was so relieved. And we were all immediately relieved.
Just backstory on Ella, and it's so amazing because she's shy, yet she puts such tremendous pressure on herself. Like,
she really does. And that's, I work very hard.
And we don't put that on her.
We try not to put pressure on herself.
We never put this pressure on her. But she has set her New Year's resolution that she will never have her clip basically go down in her classroom.
The behavior management chart in her classroom.
That,
and then
for the whole year, that it'll never be a certain color. That she cannot stomach getting less than 20/20 on her spelling test. I mean, it just drives her crazy. And here's the thing. She's not like...
And again, that pressure is not from us. I'm always explaining to her, you're not always going to get everything right. And it's what you learn from your mistakes that really matter.
And she's also, it's not like she goes into things saying, I need to get a 20/20. I need to get a 20/20. I need to get a 20/20. It's on the back end that if it doesn't happen, she gets upset. She doesn't start Monday and say, I've got to clear the decks. I've got to concentrate on this. She'll lollygag. Like, you know, she's a player. She dances around half the time. When she was in dance, when she didn't get the trophy that she wanted, she came to us and said, what do I have to do to get to that level?
Her New Year's resolution includes getting to that level, by the way.
There's just such psychology. And it's so interesting to watch. Like, I'm just like, I'm overwhelmed with the psychology of your, and you don't want to like turn your child into a test tube, but it's just like this, like the psychology is just all you think about. So she gets the second place. We know at this point that the weekend cannot be bad.
Yeah, we're fine because for your first horse show, you'll be good with a second.
We know we can take that to the bank.
Yeah,
we're good.
We're relieved. It's okay.
And Coco did start.
It was really sweet to
see
my mom cry.
That was probably the most emotional I've seen Coco in a situation like that.
Yeah.
Sweet little Coco started crying. You're crying.
Nope.
Oh, no, you didn't cry. You didn't cry then. That's right.
Nope. I just was relieved. I could just start breathing then.
Yes. And yeah. then in this weird category called pleasure.
Which is just, it's so subjective. And you're just like, okay. It's
supposed to be about how well you get along with your horse. And it shows.
No, maybe that.
We don't know.
No one's very clear about it. Except for there was like a 4-year-old in Ella's class on that. And everyone knew that the baby was going to get pleasure. And she did. Ella got fourth on that one. And we were like, okay, like whatever. If that's the one you're going to get fourth place in, like, but you know, that's still a ribbon. So that's fine. Whatever. We'll take fourth. But you know, and here's the thing, you ride your event and they announce the winners and then you immediately go into your next one. So like, you know, you have to. So then, and the next one was polls. And
then it started to get real.
Yeah. Polls, and then that she came in second. And then her last one was walk trot.
Which
and,
is what she's really.
Which is what she was really
focused on.
It's
the real competition of this one.
For her.
Well, it's also the most complicated. I mean, there's actual. Yeah. And so. And she ends up getting.
First place. And that's when I cried.
You cried. And I will say, I didn't take a lot of photos. I wish I had. I'll never forget the moment. Because they all. The girl. The horses all line up. Away, facing away from everybody, yes. So they can see the numbers. And she flashed back around to us.
I hope the photographer captured
it. And looked at you. And she did it on second, fourth, or second, which is
right.
There was no reaction. When she got first, she flashed back to you. And she was so proud of herself.
Yes.
And it was just, it was just this incredible moment for her.
It really was.
It just, and then so.
And that made all the hard work worth it. That made all of, you know, just to see her pride. And so we go, we take care of our horse, we tack up. I mean, we take off all the tack, you know, we do all the things you need to do. We pack up. Cause also the part of every night you pack up all of their tack and you lock it up in the tack room because, you know, you're competing against other stables and stuff and the barns are wide open. So you just don't want your stuff left out. You know, you pack up your saddle and everything. I have to clean her saddle. We're still bringing it in. So I have to clean and oil it before and after every single ride because we're still trying to condition it. And, you know, she, so we were watching her other teammates. We have a great day. We, of course, you know, did some celebration. And then later that night, the head trainer's like, hey, did Ella pick up her champion ribbon? I'm like, her what? She's like, yeah, she's the grand champion of her class. We were already back at the hotel because Peter's allergy to the control says, like, Ella, we got to go back to the showgrounds. And we had to go pick up her grand champion ribbon. So our sweet girl in her first ever horse show.
Basically the best in class.
Yes, it's the best in class.
And so she won that. And so it's a big, just a big ribbon.
It's almost as big as she is.
Somehow we've taken 25 minutes to go into this. It was just such a big weekend.
It was a big weekend. And her second day was equally as good. She had another first place in walk trot. Doesn't matter. And she was reserve champion. Here's the thing. It was just. I'm so glad it's her sport. I can't wait to do it again. I can't wait to watch her keep practicing. I mean, this kid is so dedicated and fearless. And
so this audience knows I saw how much incredible, like my job was to drive you there, unpack the heavy things, pay for the hotel room.
I often unpack all the heavy things all by myself, and so I was very happy to have you.
Crushed it this weekend. You crushed it this weekend. More so, I mean, Dance Mom is Dance Mom.
I still have to do hair and makeup that's really complicated as Dance Mom. So, but it's not physical. It's not.
You
as
had
physical.
To do a double braid on this one.
I know
you had. You were doing also,
and the clothes are very specific clothes, on this I mean, one. This I had to take her show coats.
Oh,
in
and remember,
to get
she fell down in the first 30 minutes. We're there. Her pants
got stains on them, and I think, thank God, I had a backup pair, and thank God the lovely. That's what we need to talk about. The wonderful hotel that we stayed at in the Villages,
the Town Place Suites
by Marriott.
By Marriott. Listen, if you're looking for a great $200 room, I think it was like
it was $112 a night. It was our rate. There, because. Our stable stays there a lot. $349 is their
It was great. Rate. I'm telling you, this brand, ever since Marriott bought all these smaller hotels and then added Marriott features to them.
Yeah.
They're great hotels. They're like great little places to stay. Village is after dark. Hashtag Village is after dark. I just got to say a couple things about that. Number one, I didn't know the Villages was actually Villages.
Like, yeah, we had no idea.
I didn't know it was a bunch of villages. I thought it was the Villages. Yeah. Like, and then
I just thought it was like one contained little space. I didn't realize it was so large.
Number two, those people know how to party.
I mean, the live music and I mean, how many people were out there at night dancing till like 9 o'clock to.
And the next night they had the Four Tops in town.
I mean,
they were ready to party.
They were.
All the restaurants are filled. People, I mean,
you can't find golf cart parking anywhere.
You know how.
In the golf cart filling station. I loved the golf cart filling station. Right. In smack dab in the middle of the
Villages. These people, hold on. These people are active. That's basically the bottom line. Yeah. You wonder how they got this old. They're active. I mean, they're living their best lives.
The restaurant that we went to for dinner on the first night as a team, the very long dinner that Peter tried his best to tip the manager to get extra servers on, and a server just walked away and was like, I'm not doing this table, because there was 38 of us, 13 of which were kids. Peter tried to make that better and be like, I'll pay for all the kids' foods. Like, you don't have to worry about the checks, because the kids were all seated together and the adults were separate, and we were trying to make things easier. They couldn't figure that out. They were like turned into a nightclub at 9 o'clock. Like, the lights went dim and the DJ started setting up and the disco ball started going and they started like spinning.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, all right. And it goes till 2 a.m.
Yeah.
They're crushing it in the Villages. Want to retire to the Villages.
We were in bed and the Villages was just getting cranked up.
Yeah. We were asleep by 9 o'clock each night. 9 o'clock. Snoring.
So that was our weekend. The weekend ended on a somber note, especially for me. We're driving home. And
I said, oh shit, I can't believe this. And Peter's like, what? Because it was like the tone of my voice. And I was like, Kobe Bryant died in a plane crash? A helicopter crash?
And then we thought it was a hoax. A hoax. Somebody.
TMZ was the only outlet reporting it. And then other people were tweeting a statement saying, like, that from his agent saying that he wasn't dead. And then.
Then we saw, I think, an LA Times report that it was.
That it was, in fact, real.
It was legitimate. And, we'll talk about that in a second. We asked our friend, my fraternity brother, I've known him for over 25 years now, Jimmy Miller, to come on and talk a little bit with us about Kobe Bryant. Again, this is, I know that maybe we could talk more about politics, but sometimes life intersects and just knocks you for a loop. It was one of those bizarre split screen nights last night where the scoop about John Bolton's revelation that he had direct knowledge of the president withholding the aid to Ukraine was being drowned out by tens of millions of people on social media reacting to the news of Kobe Bryant's passing. And it was something that hit me hard. I was a huge basketball fan. As a child, I was a huge Lakers fan. We have our own little personal anecdote about Kobe Bryant. I have really fallen in love with the NBA again over the last 2 years, and Kobe was part of that. And so we're going to talk to Jimmy Miller. He works at the Florida League of Cities, but a big disclaimer that this has nothing to do with FLC.
Not a thing.
Not a thing.
We're talking they no politics with Jimmy.
They are disowning him here, but here is Jimmy Miller for our interview. Okay, joining us now.
No, wait, hold on. I feel like I should just give everybody a disclaimer at the top of this. This is going to be the session of the podcast where Peter geeks out with a really good friend of his about a subject that has nothing to do with politics. So, just your forewarning, and take it away, honey.
Joining us now is fraternity brother, friend of the pod. He has other titles in Tallahassee, but we're ignoring them today. Basketball aficionado James Miller. Jimmy, how are you?
Hey, Peter, that's the best introduction I think I've ever had in my life.
This is definitely going to be our version of the Bill Simmons podcast. You're basically Chris Ryan this morning.
I love it. I love it. Let's do it.
Michelle is looking at me right now like, oh, My goodness.
No, I was just like, who's Chris Ryan?
Yeah, he's the other guy.
Bill Simmons, no, right? You like,
I know who Bill Simmons is, and I know the girl. I actually tune out when the girl's not on.
The other guy on the Rewatchables podcast. The other guy.
Got it. Yeah, the other guy.
The other guy.
That's always a good description for someone. The other guy.
The other guy. Jimmy, as soon as news of Kobe Bryant's death was confirmed, you were the first person I called because...
And I can confirm that this is factual. This is not Peter making up a story for good drama. You were actually the first person he called.
You're my, you know, you're the friend that I talk to right now about basketball. We have that shared language. For those of you who don't know, Jimmy was a very good basketball player. I played basketball. And to the extent of that, we just both love the game. I believe early on in your professional career, you worked for one of the teams in public relations, if I'm correct, and did other things. And so I just, you know, it's hard. I know this is a podcast about politics, but the news of this week is going to be, it's going to be impeachment on one thing, but it's also going to be mourning the loss of one of the few transcendental legends of sports and pop culture of the last 20 years, Kobe Bryant.
Yeah, I was very fortunate, excuse me, to, when I was working for the Orlando Magic and Sunshine Network, about, was it 15, 20 years ago, I had the opportunity at the end of each basketball game, I had to go interview the visiting players, that the Magic played that night. And so I had the opportunity over the years to interview both Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant. And it was really interesting to see how much he patterned himself after Jordan. It was truly fascinating, from the way they spoke to the way they dressed to the, I mean, just everything about it was incredible. And you know, one thing I was thinking about, Peter, when we were, after we hung up yesterday, was there was that time during in the '90s where all these, you know, the next Jordans were coming out, right? It was Grant Hill. It was, you know, Penny Hardaway. It was, you know, Vince Carter.
I remember Penny Hardaway. I loved his little bobblehead. See, that's the content exactly. I'm going to be adding.
Great
to
contribution there, Michelle.
You're welcome,
thank
guys.
You.
You're welcome. That, you. I told you I'd be giving a lot of great, insightful analysis. Back to what you were saying.
And then they also had a guy nicknamed Baby Jordan himself, Harold Miner. And that's how hard they were trying to find this next Jordan.
And he was the least, by the way, just for the record, the least most like Mike of all the people that did.
Right, exactly.
Like, you know, Grant Hill and Vince Carter had great, you know, I think not Hall of Fame careers, but maybe Hall of Fame careers, you know, and Penny Hardaway obviously had a great career, but Harold Miner, by the way, did not. Like he was the least baby Jordan of them all.
It was funny. He had a bald head and he dunked and everyone just automatically, oh, he's got to be Michael Jordan.
Right.
You know? And anyways, just all these guys came about and they all crashed and burned for whatever reason, either injuries or, you know, lack of talent. And then finally Kobe came along and he was, I guess, the closest thing that I've ever seen to Jordan. And he was incredible. I loved watching him play.
I think so. People are going to, like, there's always people who are detractors when people die. They're like, why are you mourning a celebrity's passing? You didn't know them. I'm thinking there's a local radio TV guy here, Chris Ingram, who was complaining on Facebook that people should not be, you know, mourning Kobe Bryant. Did he know who your kids' names were?
I don't understand how people can't figure out why we mourn famous figures. It's not just the human being you're mourning. It's that part of your life that they represent to you. And Kobe Bryant represents a large part of any kid who followed basketball's life, right?
Well, yes. And then some. Like, exactly. I think both Jimmy and I, we can mark our lives by the years that Kobe Bryant was doing things. You know, 96. He gets drafted, you know, we are sophomore juniors in college. You know, we can think about the various years. We can think about, I think, you know, like I made the argument back on, I wrote this like whole long thing on Chris Ingram's Facebook page and then I deleted it. And it was, you know, Kobe Bryant, you know, made us dream of what is possible. He was one of the very, very few athletes where you had the matching of incredible talent with an incredible level of hard work. Usually it's one or the other. Nowadays, you see that there's a lot of hard work into it, the Tom Brady's and the LeBrons and so forth. But a lot of times we see a mismatch. We see somebody with an abundance of talent and maybe they don't work as hard, or we see somebody, you know, with not as much talent but overcompensates for that by working very hard. Here you had one of the greatest players ever who outworked everyone. And with that, he made you dream of what's possible. And so when somebody like this dies, the dreams that, you know, I can remember specific moments, the way Kobe Bryant would like do his fist and like kind of, you know, shove that out there. I can remember you yep. doing that. I can remember myself doing that. I can remember right. us putting the sweatbands over our arms at the right below the elbow level, like Kobe did, because we saw that. And like so many other young kids, we saw that and wanted to be like that. And we saw, all right, that's how the best competitor competes. And when he wins, he celebrates like that. I want to compete at that level. I want to win. So I'm going to do what I can, which in this case is not much except wear a sweatband around your forearm.
You know, it's funny. I think what Kobe kind of did the same thing that Tiger did in a way, is that, you know, Kobe came in with this incredible determination and this work ethic that had kind of never been seen before. And he really rubbed a lot of people the wrong way just yeah. because of that. He expected, if I'm going to work this hard and I'm the best player, then I fully expect the 12th guy on the team to work this hard. And as a result, you saw this whole generation of players, you know, with this increased work ethic, kind of like what Tiger did on the tour, where all of a sudden everyone's going, well, heck, if I'm going to compete with Tiger, I need to start hitting the weight room and I need to start doing more than just, you know, doing 12-ounce, you know, Budweiser curls. I need to start doing actual curls right. in the weight room. And I think that probably wasn't met with the best reception early on. You know,
oh, I think about Carl Malone freezing him animal. Out. Like Carl Malone freezed him out of the All-Star game, didn't he? Or he
right,
tried to.
Exactly.
They did not like him in the first year.
Nope.
You know, when they came. In fact, you know, a point I said to Michelle early on, I do think there's a lot of things that handicapped him about or handcuffed his legacy. We'll talk about that in a moment. But one of them was, I think, him not going to college, not because he wasn't smarter. He clearly was one of the more intelligent professional athletes, especially in the way he communicated. I would say it had more to do with him not going to college. We never fell in love with Kobe Bryant the way like people fell in love with like Zion last year, you know,
or Taco Fall
or Taco. Yes. To bring it back home for Michelle.
All right, listen again. But I'm here for the important basketball analysis.
Even though, other than Duke players, although Zion's a Duke player, like, we didn't fall in love with him at March Madness. So he just came out, he forces a trade, and wow, this is a really pompous kid at this point. And so I think that was one of the things. I also think, and I wonder what your opinion on this is, I think almost all of sports, tracks back to Michael Jordan now at this point. Like, mm-hmm. the more I look at how the player empowerment movement in the NBA and soccer, and I look at people's legacies and so forth, as reserved as Michael Jordan is publicly right now, other than his ownership of a really bad basketball team, I think everything kind of tracks back to him. I think everything is measured. Like, is Tom Brady the Michael Jordan of football?
Exactly.
Is LeBron the next Michael Jordan? Did the entire player empowerment movement start out of Michael Jordan deciding, you know, to go play baseball and to be different than what our expectations were? And it Kobe is this transitionary figure, you know, between Jordan and LeBron. And I think his legacy gets edged out a little bit there, that we kind of only remember him for a good 10 or 12 of those years, and we forget that this guy had a 20-year career in the NBA.
And you know what? I don't know if you remember back in the day, I think it was his first season or maybe second season in the playoffs, he shot two air balls that ended up losing a game.
Yeah.
Losing the game for the Lakers against the Jazz. You know, they gave him the opportunity. He totally.
You think I don't remember those games?
Yeah. And you think that could have just crushed a lot of people. I mean, that's tough to lose the game for your team in the playoffs. And not only that, you shoot two air balls. I mean, you weren't even close as a rookie. And he's the kind of guy that takes that and turns it into something else. And he ended up being this incredible, incredible player. And you're right. The comparisons to Jordan, it's interesting because it was unfair for Kobe, but at the same time, he used Michael Jordan was like his goal. He wanted to be Jordan the entire time. And like I said, the way he dressed, the way he acted, he wanted to be that next Jordan. And he came as close as I think anyone possibly could up until this point. And it's just, it's just such a shame. I mean, what was really neat is to see what he was doing after basketball. You know, everyone thinks, oh, you just drift away, or you maybe do commentary on TV, like some of these guys do.
Yeah, that wasn't going to happen.
He ended up winning an Oscar.
Yeah.
You know, he won an Academy Award, for goodness sakes.
And he actually said that was one of the things that he was most proud of, because everyone asked him, what are you going to do after you retire? And when he would tell them that he wants to write, everybody would kind of laugh at him. And he said that winning that Oscar kind of proved all of those naysayers wrong, and he was very proud of that
exactly.
accomplishment for that. So it was kind of cool to see that.
I saw today in there's a great email tout sheet I subscribe to, Dylan Byers, The Market, and it noted that Kobe had a $5 million stake in Body Armor, and that had turned into a $200 million part of his portfolio. That he had
wow.
the all-time record for career earnings, $680 million.
Wow.
Yeah, this was a massive, he had a massive, massive empire beyond, anything. But I go back to, and I don't know, how you deal with it. Could he have been bigger had Colorado, the accusations of rape against him not been... If that incident had not happened, Michelle and I brought it up. If that incident happens now, that ends his career. I mean, that
yes.
Adam Silver comes out there and suspends him immediately. And maybe in a year and a half, he comes back. He only won one MVP award. I think that was a direct result of what happened in Colorado, whether, we'll never know the final word on that. But yeah, I definitely think it impacted his overall legacy. Like if he gets three MVPs and is beloved, is he in the conversation as one of the top five? And this is where I believe he is off Mount Rushmore looking up. I Russell, Jordan, Magic, and then I guess LeBron right now. And then I think he is number 5, 6, 7 in that range. Maybe Kareem is ahead of him. Maybe Wilt is ahead of him. I don't know if he is number. I don't think he is on Mount Rushmore. But I will say, is he the greatest Laker? Because he did bring the team 5 championships. He did play there for 20 years. He did. I don't know how, looking back now, how he won titles with just Pau Gasol. great player, but Kobe was totally banged up. It makes sense that they should have actually probably won a fourth title with Shaq. I mean, they blew that up there. But where do you peg him in your rankings?
Yeah, and I think you and I talked about this. I have a tough time ranking guys I didn't see. So, I mean, as much as I am sure Bill Russell was amazing and, Wilt Chamberlain was amazing, but I never actually saw those guys play.
Yeah.
So it's tough for me to really rank them. But, if I look at the guys that I've actually seen play since I was a kid until now, if he's not on Mount Rushmore, he's, the first one out, right? The second one out. I mean, he's incredible. And in terms of the greatest Laker, us in college and everything, Magic was always my guy. you know, Stockton was your guy, Magic was my guy. And he'll always, to me, be the greatest.
Well, my guy led it all time in assists, but your guys did it. Your
Magic
guy
was my guy, too, by the way, to be really clear.
Right.
You're
right.
Laughing, and but that's says, actually true.
Go ahead, Michelle. I'm sorry.
No, Peter was laughing at me when I said Magic.
Oh, I love
was
Magic.
Also my guy,
I mean, everybody, I love Matt. He was my number two, you know, favorite. But go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, I'd say if someone said Kobe's the greatest Laker of all time, I would never argue that. In fact, Magic
said
it out.
Magic tweeted it out last night. That's just so Magic, you know, so people say, Magic, come on, no, you're the greatest Laker.
Yeah, and you know, I would never argue that. I think Magic and Kobe are probably 1-2 right there, and, you know, depending on your preference, you know, 2-1, whichever one you like more. But, you know, it's the one thing, you know, you talked about Colorado and all that. I think Kobe just, if he would have handled things a little differently, I would love to have seen what his career could have been. Obviously, the Colorado thing was bad, but, you know, the whole Shaq thing, I mean, they were looking at 10 championships if they had just gotten along together, and he kicked Shaquille O'Neal out of town. And I just think things like that, he was prickly to begin with. You know, he was arrogant to begin with and made him great. But then you add all these other things that he did or happened to him. And I think that kind of, it sullied his reputation a little bit. And I think he could have been so much more. I think people just held that against him, fairly or unfairly. You know, and it's, I don't know, I think it's unfortunate because he's just an incredible player. I think some people just would never get over the way he handled some of those situations.
That's why I'll be honest, why I love sports more now than I have. So like my sports trajectory is I love it up until basically we have a child, and I made a very conscious decision that I wasn't going to give up time for sports to watch sports when I could spend time with Ella. And so I really, like, I stopped watching the NFL on Sunday. I would follow it. Like, I know who won. I knew the records and everything like that. And now I've come back to it. And to me, actually, the games are not as important as the stories. And that isn't like the Pam Oliver, you know, stories on the sideline about, the kid because his dad's not there and, you know, he played great for him. It's more the longer, like Tom Brady and his mm-hmm. battle against time, where it's just like that, you know, he's not going to win that. When is he going to lose that battle? But it's just so amazing to watch it. Or like Kawhi Leonard. Like, I loved the off season in the NBA.
Yeah, that's great.
I loved that movie. What is it? High Flying Bird this year by Steven Soderbergh. Mm-hmm. Because I felt like it captured that the NBA is not about the game so much as it is the storyline in a lot of ways. And I felt like Kobe in a way, just to bring in a Hamilton, because we kept listening to, is he an Aaron Burr figure? Is he a tragedy? Is he a villain in a way? Did Kobe, at the end of the day, was he our greatest villain? And I hate to say that, because at the end is, you know, and he's just so beautiful with his daughter. But was he, as a player, was he maybe the greatest Laker villain that we had at the time?
Yeah, you could argue that. As great as he was, it's so weird to think that as amazing and as talented as he was, that he's looked on as a villain. Usually it's guys like a Dennis Rodman or some of these guys that are just, you know, they bring it on themselves and they're just doing, you know, silly, crazy things and they're agitating people. But Kobe, man, it just, you look at his talent and you think, man, he should have been beloved by everybody all over this world, just like Jordan was. And he just wasn't, you know, some of it through his fault. And some of it, I think, may have been unfair on the, you know, the hatred towards him, but you're right. He may have been one of our best villains in spite of the fact that he was a really great guy to his family. In a lot of ways, especially his daughters.
Any final thoughts for the audience here? I know you and I could geek. Like, Michelle is looking at me like, okay.
She's like, wrap this up for the love of God. Wrap this up.
Well, and
no,
I
actually was going to chime in. After he was also a great supporter of the WNBA. He's also a great supporter of the women's national soccer team. He's been a huge supporter of women's athletics. And yes, he does have 4 daughters. So that makes sense. But for such a athletic, a male superstar to be such an advocate of women's sports, was huge, and it meant a lot to those programs. And, you know, so they will also feel a big loss. So, you know, the villain argument is a tough one. Like, I get it. Don't get me wrong. But it's, you know, you feel bad that when a man's life is so tragically taken so short, you know, at so young, it's that we even have to have these discussions about whether he's a villain or not. At the end of the day, to me, he was a husband, he was a father, and there's a family who's missing him now.
And Michelle, I wanted to mention this to you. I didn't know if you knew this, but Peter was actually on a cruise ship with Kobe Bryant. I wasn't sure if you were aware of this.
I don't know if you know this or not, but I was there too. I was there too. And my favorite joke.
That's right. You were.
Yeah. And every time we stay in the exact room Kobe stayed in, I always like to ask Peter, so how do you feel that your butt is sitting on the same toilet seat that Kobe sat on?
Michelle was so such a key part of, and Ella was joking about it with us today. She's like, is that the greatest moment in your life, Dad? I'm like, no, like having you.
And she's like, no, Dad, I know it was Kobe Bryant.
And I'm like, no.
It's a close second, Ella. I'm going to let you know it's a close second.
Yeah, Ella's a big ball buster.
Michelle was so key because, like, you know, I'm standing in the lounge just, like, drinking.
Well, because I don't know if you know this, Jimmy, but Peter actually isn't the best at situational awareness. So
I was just, sure, I was oblivious. I'm like, hey, what? And she's like, go to the elevator now. I'm like, I don't want to go to the elevator now. And she's like,
I'm like, just do what I say and do it when I say it.
And then you see, he had his whole, he had his entourage with them. And then that's when, and see, I would keep telling the story. I was like, oh, he told me I looked awesome. He's like, no, you jackass. Michelle would say, he's like, he looked at both of us, and he probably wasn't looking at the dude. He was probably looking at the beautiful woman in this elaborate pirate outfit. He was probably not like, oh, wow, I'm glad you have on a khaki outfit. I don't know what she's doing. So, but I will say, and this is where I'll close out on this. I'll never forget this man, as we all know, we've been on him, just sitting in the beach sand, playing with his children. I mean, and that is honestly how I will, that's how I will remember Kobe Bryant, because he was this great dad. And he was, I'll never forget that.
Remember,
moment.
I told you after that trip, I felt sorry for him.
Yeah.
Because here was a man with all of the wealth in the world, and all he wanted was to make memories with his daughters. And he couldn't do it the way that you and I get to. He had to have security guards surround him to protect him from people who wanted to be intrusive on his family time. They couldn't go to princess gatherings and the Bippity Boppity Boutique and all the things that we do with our daughter, because he was such a public figure, they just would get mobbed. And he just wanted to be on that beach while his little girl put her foot in the sand and in the ocean for the first time.
Yep.
And other people on that beach couldn't let them have the moment and had to come up and ask for pictures. And security had to push him away. And then Kobe left. He ended up going back to the ship so his kids could enjoy the day on the beach. And so for me, I was struck by how lonely that existence had to be.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I remember about him, is how lonely I felt he was.
Well, on that note, Jimmy, thank you so much. We know you've got to get to it.
Thank you guys very much.
We know you have to actually work.
Work today.
I really appreciate it.
Is this going to be a new segment? Is Peter and Jimmy talk basketball? I mean, you know, just as it goes through, break down the playoffs. Like, all right. Well, thanks a lot for joining us today.
You guys are the best.
Thank you.
A lot of people give their opinions on politics and not just the talking heads on cable news. Everyone has an opinion. Sometimes a gentleman's wager can be the best way to tell how much someone believes their own spin. That's why you should check out what Predictit is doing. Predictit is like the stock market, but for politics. Instead of buying and selling oil futures, you can buy and sell shares in everything from who the Democratic nominee will be to if the president will be impeached. It's easy and only costs a few bucks to get started. He Said, She Said listeners can get a special introductory offer by visiting predictit.org/promo/FLAPOL.
Honey, thank you for indulging fanboy Peter.
Listen, I mean, you guys delivered. You did a great deep dive on Kobe Bryant, and I'm really glad you guys were able to do that. I have no idea what you guys are talking about for most of the time, but that's all right. I got to do I caught up on some email.
I guess it's like something that you and I really don't talk about, but I was just such a basketball fan.
Like, I know that. I mean, I've heard about your tattoo story on your ankle, your Nike swoosh. I mean, I know that. But my husband
has never played basketball,
never been into sports at all. Not even my fiance was never into any of these
things. Over one time.
No, you didn't watch sports or any of that then either. It was a. But whatever. I mean, apparently there's this whole other side to you, and I'm happy to indulge it from time to time. And I really learned it when we were on that Disney cruise, and I came back and said to you, I came back from the spa. The nail techs told me who the celebrity on board was. They saw my stateroom number. They're like, oh, do you know who's next door to you? And that's when I came back and told you that Kobe Bryant was on our cruise. And you fanboyed in a way I never thought I would see you do. And so I realized, oh, maybe he actually might like basketball.
I don't know. I guess you have that little brush with somebody. And, you know, I talked about it with Castaway Key and the moment where the pirate outfits. But I do remember him also being at peace on the sun deck.
Yeah, meditating on the sun deck.
That seemed very Kobe to me. He was just very cerebral.
Yeah.
And that is something where the public matched up with the private. And I would love to talk about, I don't want to talk about it now more, but I guess I wish I could talk about more of this stuff, like the intersection of sports, society, race. I feel like it's something that I talked more about as a younger man. And we talked about it for a second when we were driving in, to me, all of it comes together. It congeals together. And I know, not to get bogged down into it, but like, I think Trump, Obama, NBA, Colin Kaepernick, Kobe, to me, that actually is all one topic. And I look at it quite honestly, and I see the people that resent Kobe Bryant and the people who criticize people for mourning Kobe Bryant. Why are they all Trump people? Like, why is that happening? And this isn't to get into Trump, Obama, or whatever. Why is it that people that like basketball are the globalists? Like, why is the NBA the liberal sport? And all of it intersects in my...
Is it the liberal sport?
Oh, yeah. It's definitely the most progressive.
Because I'm going to say it's the progressives, it's the liberals who are decrying all of the people who are mourning Kobe Bryant and saying, you know, we feel bad for his victim, that she's going to have to hear his name for the next few weeks. Like, people should be focusing on that, which is just so tone deaf and so disgusting to me. Like, listen, I get it, but that's not the time. Right now, there are three little girls who lost their dad and their big sister. And then there's a woman who lost her husband, the man she'd been with since she was 17 years old, and her daughter, her firstborn child. I don't know how Vanessa Bryant woke up this morning.
I think, and I hate to say it, I saw a tweet from a blue check mark. I think she's also going through postpartum.
Because they have a new baby.
A new baby. Somebody said had brought that up. To answer your question, yes, basketball is, compared to the other sports, is the blackest of the sports by
demographic. Right, I'm aware of that, yes.
And therefore, its politics lend itself to... And there is a resentment towards basketball, especially right now. This player empowerment movement where the player is more important than the team.
Right.
That started with the LeBron decision movement. Traditional middle class.
The LeBron decision was still not good.
It was it was a bad decision.
It was a bad decision.
But, you know, old-fashioned white America doesn't like watching that. They don't like... Like, the NBA is, you know, they made the decision not to, football.
And football.
Football, overwhelmingly. They don't, like, the NBA got rid of the term, or is getting rid of the term, owners. They're not owners. This isn't.
Right, because you don't want to harken back to slave owners.
And so there is.
You can't own people.
There's an actual
is the argument, right?
Yes. And there's just a there's just a move. There's just a more of a liberal conscious, a traditional liberal consciousness in basketball. And there's a,
that makes sense.
And it just, I can just see it all playing out on the same plane. And so I would love to go talk about it more. And I also, LA means something to me, like abstractly, like it's one of these places that I dream about that I don't know. Like I have something inside of me that like yearns for West Coastedness, like the things that LA represents, technology and Asian culture meeting American culture. And just like the idea that there's great Korean and great sushi on every different corner. There's just something like, if I was doing things differently in my life, you know, like, yes, I would be like, that would, that's that type of culture would be something that I would like to be a part of, as opposed to Florida culture or what have you. That doesn't, like, being in Margaritaville doesn't appeal to me as much as, like,
no, you're the opposite of a Margaritaville guy.
Yeah, it just that kind of like that. I've always, like, when Jim Rome, when I first heard his talk show 20 something years ago,
I used to listen to the Rome Report,
and he was all about West Coast, and I didn't understand what that meant, but I get it. Like, there's just something to it. So, and I feel like Kobe embodied LA more so than almost any other athlete.
I mean, because he played there for 20 years.
Yeah, well, even more so than Magic is like kind of ubiquitous as compared to like,
Magic became like a national figure. I mean, he was the first person to really make the HIV virus something that everyone in America was talking about. And it wasn't just a dirty word anymore. It was, oh my God, this is a real epidemic. And he is probably responsible for a lot of saved lives, because not only because of the research that he helped fund when he was trying to get his cure, but also because of the awareness he brought to it. And so I hear you. I can see how Kobe is more of an LA guy than Magic was. And last night, the Grammys in the Staples Center.
Yeah.
And people having to
set the house that Kobe built. I mean,
literally.
They financed that because they knew they were going to have this guy there for, you know, another decade, and were able to get that money for that.
I mean, and so
it's going to be something tonight. Clippers versus Lakers in the Staples Center. I don't know how they're going to play that game.
I don't know how they're going to play that game.
I don't know how LeBron goes onto the floor. All of this said, I talked about it with Jimmy. I know that there's a cap to this. Like, I know that he is not Jordan. I know he is not Muhammad Ali. I know he's not Tom Brady. I know he's not Magic, even. That there were not only, I'm not just talking about Colorado, but just he was mercurial throughout his career. And so he will, you know, he'll go down. He's not Peyton Manning. Like, Peyton Manning was like, is a national spokesman and, you know, could, you know, whereas like Drew Brees is not. Like, Drew Brees, Drew Brees will go down as one of the 10 best quarterbacks, but he didn't break through to that next level. Whereas, you know, Brady and Manning are at that level. So I'll leave it there. I know somebody who's out in California right now, and this is a political show. And so
maybe we should talk politics.
Maybe we should talk politics.
And the Iowa caucuses are next week.
Do you want to bring on our good friend? I feel like there's a surge coming on this podcast right now. I feel our podcast surging. Kevin, Kate, talk a little, move away from sports for a moment and talk
politics.
Let's talk politics.
Let's talk politics.
All right.
Let's talk Iowa caucus.
He's a few hours behind him. Let's see if Kevin Kate is up. I called him and woke him up early to make sure that he'd be on the podcast. Here's Kevin Kate. Joining us now, straight from the campaign trail,
is our good friend, Kevin Kate.
How are you, Kevin?
How we doing? I'm doing very, very well. It's always good to be on with the Shores family.
Are you walking door to door in Iowa today?
I'm actually in California today, doing a little work.
Sorry, Peter.
I'll leave the Iowa and the actual work to the experts in real work in Iowa and New Hampshire.
And so what is your official title? You are a consultant to the Tom Steyer for President campaign. Is that good enough disclosure?
That sounds about right. I make TV commercials.
You make beautiful TV commercials. Like when I get buried, I want Kevin Kate to come back and just, you know, put.
Do you want him to do the in memoriam?
Yes, please, please, okay. Kevin. Will you do my in memoriam?
Oh, Kevin, when I call you, you better take that call in like 45, 50 years.
I love that you know that you're going to outlive me. I love that you just, you know,
you are 5 years older than me, and men do have a shorter lifespan than women. Right. So we'll start there off the bat.
You know, you're not allowed to marry again.
Right? Don't worry. Don't plan to.
Right. All right. Just want to be clear about that. We're talking to you now. The Iowa primary or the Iowa caucus is in 1 week or 8 days. And then Florida is in just over 7 weeks. How are you feeling about your candidate?
Yeah, tell us about the Steyer surge.
She worked that in there
for you,
Kevin.
I mean, you've probably seen it. Thank you very much. The branding only works when other people start saying it.
Right.
So as soon as other people start
saying it. That's what I'm doing.
How did you get Politico?
I am trying to help you out.
You got Politico to write that in the headline. I was just like, is he in the office ghostwriting?
They weren't the only outlet to recognize what's actually happening on the ground in Nevada and in South Carolina, which is a Steyer surge, to say the least. We have a very diverse coalition of supporters, and I expect that we'll do very well there.
What is the, is there, I don't know. It seems like everybody's got like a playbook here right now. You know, do well here, finish second there. Bloomberg is waiting until the final, you know, he's bypassing, you know, the first, states. Is there a place that you think you're going to do? I don't want you to get caught at all setting any expectations, because that will be used against you. But let's set some expectations here. Is there one place where you feel just a little bit better than maybe other places? Should we pay more attention to some results out of a certain state or anything like that?
Well, it's not just feeling. I mean, I think that we're doing very well where the surge has been recognized, which is South Carolina and Nevada. But I would say that primaries and caucuses in general, and this kind of whole narrative that forms into a national narrative, is all about expectations. And I think that every campaign is probably looking at what do people expect us to do, and then versus what do we do? You don't want one of those Marco Rubio moments where he says, they said this day would never come, because he wrote his speech thinking he would come in second or first. And he did. And he comes in, I think he was third for that speech. But you don't want those expectation games where you were, you know, expecting something better than what actually happened on the ground.
I think you just don't want to be Marco Rubio.
Period.
Period. I just think like you could have ended that
Bible verse response to you tomorrow.
Yeah. I feel like Rubio, I don't know. There's a special place for him just because, to just get like, I watch him and I watch Ted Cruz defend the president, and I get why Rob Johnson does. And I get why James Inhofe or whatever, and these guys that are true blues. But I mean, I just, when do they break bad the other way? Like, you know, Romney has stood up for himself. I mean, don't these guys ever want to, you know, just like say, you know, why aren't they coming forward today and saying, you know what, maybe we should hear from Bolton. He clearly has something we need to hear, and you're just not going to get it out of them.
I mean, I think it's just, I mean, it boils down to actually exposing you for who you are. I mean, there's moments of these, not just in politics, but in life, where you have decisions to make, and you either make it what decision you believe is in your self-interest and is wrong, or you do what's right. And, you know, I like to surround myself with people who, you know, do what's right and then let the politics fall where it may, whether you win or lose.
Where is the Democrat electorate at right now?
Well, all over the country. What do you mean? In Florida,
no, like,
specifically?
What is just, their mindset right now? Like, let's move away from which candidate's going to win or whatever. But what's going on in the electorate? What are you seeing? You know, I'm sure you have some access to polling and analytics that we're not getting. What is, I'm sure you have access to a lot of that that we're not getting.
Well, you have access to Ryan Tyson, so you should know everything you need to know. But
right, exactly.
That's a compliment. That was a compliment to Ryan.
Ryan, just to be clear, that was a compliment. I'm disclaimer girl on this podcast. Just, I always chime in to make sure people hear what they're supposed to.
Kate blast Tyson on podcast.
No. Kate did not blast Tyson. Kate complimented Tyson. Sorry. I don't want to, you know, be controversial here.
What is the mindset of the Democrat electorate a week out from Iowa as the impeachment hearings are swirling or impeachment trial is swirling? You know, what is their number one issue? I don't know. Like I don't know the Democratic base well enough to say they're more concerned with impeachment or they're still worried about health care or, you know, where are they?
They're not. I mean, Democrats and anyone with, compassion and patriotism in their blood, you know, already knows where they are in impeachment. So it's not the number one issue. Issues like healthcare and climate change generally pop to the top of polling when we ask people open-ended questions. But at the end of the day, I've always kind of felt, it's about, pocketbook issues or wallet issues, whatever you want to call it. You know, people vote based on those kind of issues, which would make healthcare the number one issue if you were looking at number one. But I think overall, as far as the electorate is concerned, you have to actually take into the emotion more so than just the issues, which is, you know, they really want to defeat Trump and they want to know who's the best person to do that. And I don't think that that's been decided yet. I mean, you see in a lot of the public numbers even, which are pretty terrible in general, but if you look at the public numbers, you can see the amount of people who say they're undecided or willing to change their mind, even with 1 week out from an election here or 2 weeks out from election there.
Do you think that Tom Steyer gets the appropriate amount of credit for the impeachment trial even being there? He was on the ground floor of impeach Trump. Is he getting enough credit from voters and Democratic supporter or Democratic advocates?
Well, the good news is I've been able to get to know Tom really, really well. And it was not about credit. I mean, literally it was about building the infrastructure and dragging Congress to do what was right. And I think that there's a legitimate case to be made that if this hadn't started when it did start, then we would be 2 months behind where we are right now, which would be, unfortunate. And, maybe it still has the same outcome. But again, you just got to do what's right and let the politics fall where they may. I mean, Tom always tells the story about his father, who was a prosecutor against the Nazis at Nuremberg. And when he asked him about doing that, his dad would tell him that, you always do what's right immediately. And if you see something evil in this world, you do something about it immediately, because if you let it continue, it will only get worse and worse and worse.
When do you guys make a pivot play for Florida? I mean, I know that you're up. Are you up on air in Florida?
No, we're not.
No, okay.
Not.
When does that pivot start to happen? Do you wait until after Iowa, New Hampshire, or do you guys start making the move now?
Well, I read in Sunburn that Bloomberg hired Reggie Cardozo. That's unrelated to this question, but I thought that was a good hire. And my buddy Tim Wagner, which was also a good hire. So I do think that people are starting to turn their attention a little bit to focus a little bit to Florida.
I had to work very hard to get that scoop about Reggie joining.
How did you get Reggie to even answer a phone call from you?
I had to, it's very,
who linked you guys up?
Actually, I'll say it's funny because the Kevin Kate Gillum universe is now so wide. There are some people that won't talk to me, but I will say there are so many in so many places now. They do talk and they are a good network and they are in senior positions and they are doing a very good job. The alumni there, you guys had a really good team there, and so it is nice to see. Brandon Davis working for Bloomberg.
We want everybody to get a little bit more experience and win a big one in 2020 so we can maybe do something in 2022.
Oh, wait a second.
Well, wait. Breaking news. Kevin Cate, chief advisor to Andrew Gillum, did he just say that there's going to be a 2022 run? That's what I heard.
That's exactly what I heard.
I guarantee that there will be a race in 2022. I don't know who's going to be on the ticket, but I guarantee you that there will be a race. Two of them.
What is the percentage chance of Andrew Gillum being a VP candidate for the Democratic nominee?
I mean, I think he has to be in consideration for everybody. I mean, he would bring the kind of excitement that, frankly, you don't really even see out of any of the candidates right now. I was actually in, this may be a little bit too candid, but I was in watching this convention in New Hampshire. This was months ago. And I listened to like literally every presidential candidate. And the whole time I was thinking, I was like, Andrew Gillum would just have this room in the palm of his hand. I mean, this, like, he is infinitely better at on the stump than anybody that we've seen. Like, it's incredible to be around, you know, Andrew. And at some point it kind of becomes normal to watch him just, you know, just own the crowd and just get everybody going and deliver a good moral to the story. And it's just, you know, I think he should be on anybody and everybody's short list.
Speaking of Tallahassee, if you're in California, are you still doing stuff this session? Or are you more focused on?
I mean, you know, kind of how my business works, but like we do PR things, but right now, I mean, we are, as a company, doing what I love doing most, which is making TV commercials. I mean, if I could choose my job, which I can, I like making TV commercials, but I'm certainly paying attention to what's going on at Tallahassee. I'd love to hear from you guys, but I actually think it's kind of a tame session so far, and I don't see any huge contentious anything coming to stop that.
Well, I was going to ask you if the Estoppel bill was coming back this legislative session, and I'm sure there are reporters waiting for your emails on that one.
Well, the Tallahassee Democrat and Jim Rossica, you're the one that got away. That's really although, you know, you got to look at your alumni. You had that conversation about Gillum alumni. You should look at your alumni. I mean, the Christine Jordan Sextons of the world. And although AG is doing amazing over in Jacksonville right now, too.
AG is actually in Tallahassee now.
Yeah, we moved AG over for first session, and he's going to take on the Tallahassee maelstrom. I just figure, you know, look at what he's able to dig up in Jacksonville. And I do think, and I hate to say it this way, even though Jacksonville is blown up, I think Jacksonville's going to kind of wind down a little bit. You know, Curry's going to be on his, you know, I just don't think it's going to be as interesting as having AG over in Tallahassee. And so, and we also hired a couple of new reporters. We hired Renzo Downey, who was at the Austin Statesman. And he's just awesome. I mean, he's like this, it's like another one of these young guys that we find, and he just like dove right in. And then Sarah Mueller, who we hired right at the beginning of session. So this is the first year that we have three full-time. And then we also have Rick Flagg there.
Three full-time in Tallahassee.
In Tallahassee. Yeah.
Yeah. Those are our only full-times. Right, right.
And then, you know, having Flagg with the podcast, is like having another fourth, and it's
yeah.
Just
people really love that. Really love that.
I just like you like making television commercials. My goal for this year, you know, at the end of it, I'd love to have four or five different people working on different podcasts, and it's such a, you know, it's where blogging was 10 years ago. You know, it's still wide open, and people are still sorting it out, and the money is still getting sorted out. You know, who are going to be the big players and things like that. And so, I'm kind of surprised that some of my news competitors don't have, you know, a bigger presence in the podcasting world. Like, you know, I just, why is there no...
Peter, some of those are just getting into email.
Right.
Which is,
I saw one start a weekend newsletter this weekend, and I was like...
Oh, that's original.
Yeah, I just thought the mic... And it was basically, and it literally is just
Did
a...
Did they call it lunch?
They call it... It was just a recap of their stories from the week. And I was like, I don't think they understand how this works. Like, I don't know. I told somebody, I was doing a speech last week, and I said, I feel like I am robbing the bank. I can see the money in the vault, and I'm waiting for the alarm to go off. And then I get outside of the building and get into the getaway car, and there's still nobody around. Like, I don't understand why more people aren't doing, more people with better resources, quite honestly. Like, I don't understand why they're not doing more of these things, whether it be email newsletters, whether it be podcasts, whether it be video. You know, you see what Dave Jorgensen's done with TikTok, with the Washington Post. I don't have the resources for that, quite honestly. But, you know, the Tampa Bay Times does, and I don't understand why they haven't done that yet. So I don't know.
It's weird. No, I agree. I mean, I think a lot of industries are like that. I feel like that about my industry. I actually, you know, I always thought that there was something secret that I didn't know that all these massive firms had. But I guarantee you, I've made much more commercials than anybody this cycle. And it's just, you know, you wonder, you know, sometimes people are just waiting for permission or just kind of trying to ride things out. And it's just, you know, it's weird. So that's a lesson to your listeners to not wait for permission to do their own innovative things.
Well, the barrier to entry on your industry, quite honestly, has, just like in my industry, both of ours. I mean, we wouldn't, you know, 20 years ago, we would have had to, 25, we would have had to do things differently in terms of publishing or video production, right? I mean, we would have to work at firms, and we would have to have, and, you know, we love Adam Goodman. He's a guest. He's been a guest. He writes op-eds. But I remember when Adam Goodman started, when I first saw him, you know, it was this whole production. That was part of the production, was the production. It was the Wizard of Oz. You wanted to, we're going to do all of this to create this commercial, and there's magic over here, and you can't get behind the curtain. And now, as you know,
right,
you can come out there with a camera that you can get at Best Buy, edit on, you know, your app on your computer, and be up in a half hour. And what it took a truckload of equipment to do before, you can now do on a desktop. You can literally do on your iPhone.
I know. That's why. And everybody should buy an iPhone, because that is, people don't even know. And some of the Gillum, because iPhone cameras are just getting so good. Some of the Gillum stuff, you know, we did those daily videos. Some of that, like, obviously we shot some of it with the FS7, but some of that footage is shot with an iPhone. People just don't know, because we shot it in 24 frames a second. You know, it's just like, if you know how to use your iPhone, you can do anything. Again, I'm not trying to invite competitors in my field, but just the quality isn't where it should be on a lot of, even the state, you know, state house and state senate candidates. It's like, you know, they're traveling people, or they're, you know, whoever's working for them, their campaign manager. There's no reason. I mean, I was making hype videos in 2004 with a Palm Pilot, I think. Is that what it was? The Palm, the first Palm video one. Like, just go do stuff, people. Just go do stuff.
Yeah, that is very good advice for people who are looking to make their marks or find their niche. If you don't try, you're not going to get anywhere. We know that you're really busy, but are you reading anything right now? Do you have time for that between, you know, your family and the campaigns and all of your work?
You're a big reader. You've always got great recommendations. What are you reading right now?
So I just finished an Elvis, actually two books. I didn't intend to read both of them. So I read this article where Beck was like, you have to read this Elvis biography. And so I read the first one. It's called The Rise of Elvis. I get to the end. Obviously, it's like only halfway through. He just went off to the army. And then I have to read, you know, The Fall from Grace, or whatever it's called, the second one. So I've literally just read like 1,600 pages on Elvis Presley. And I happen to be in California, and right next to one of his houses in Palm Springs, California. So I was there yesterday to see that, which was really random. And then this sounds obnoxious, but right now I'm reading a biography on Napoleon, which I've been meaning to read for a long time.
Come on. Oh, my word.
I mean,
listen, you had me completely at Elvis Presley because my dad loved Elvis Presley. So I'm literally buying that book right now as I'm talking to you. But you just lost me.
It's a book about Napoleon. It's called Small Penis.
No, I don't want to sound like Dean Cannon. Didn't Dean Cannon used to walk around with a book and tell people like the 38 laws of power or whatever about that?
I think,
which I've read that too.
First of all, don't ever make fun of Dean Cannon on this podcast. Yeah, like, ever.
We love Dean Cannon. Sorry.
He was underranked. I underranked him on my list of most powerful politicians. I fault myself for that one. He should have been higher ranked. I should have got
him. The Elvis book, the first Elvis book is the best, one of the best biographies I've ever read, and by far the best biography on music that I've ever read. I mean, I learned stuff that I had no idea. And I just went back and watched like the 68 comeback special and, you know, all the things that are associated with that. And there's some powerful things that you'll learn about that in the second book. But the first book, I highly recommend.
And well, we appreciate those recommendations.
See, I knew.
Yeah, I'm going to dive in on those.
We'll let you go in a second, but how is the extended fam? How is the Kate fam from top to bottom? Dad, sister, brother, kids. I mean, there's just so much.
Wife. Most importantly.
Kate goodness everywhere.
Well, I would start there because this has been a lot.
I was going
to be traveling as much.
I was going to say, she has taken on a lot of responsibility so you can go out and go try to
make
the world
your little
place.
Videos.
No, that's not what I was saying. He's going out there. He's
playing with your iPhone.
Okay, well, that might, like, I would maybe say that to you, Peter, if you had been on the road that long and, like, I had three kids and I was pulling my hair out, like, enough with this iPhone shit.
And
get
Elvis,
home.
I don't give a shit about Elvis anymore.
All right, so back to, how's your lovely bride?
She's amazing, and that's why I was like, none of this is, I couldn't do a 3/4 of this without her, because obviously we've got the three kids, but also just the support. I mean, presidential campaigns are a lot, and I just went through, you know, obviously a pretty contested gubernatorial, and these things seem to come back to back to back. And normally I like to take a little bit of time in between cycles, but I didn't really get an in-between cycle this year.
No, you did
not. Or last year. So she's been fantastic, and the kids are great. Edison's in soccer now, and Ainsley and Emery are into volleyball now. And it's just really just fun being a dad. And I look forward every time I get to come home, which is soon. I'm actually coming home tomorrow from this trip. So,
oh, wonderful.
I could gush for another 5 minutes on that, but I won't. But everybody else is good. Dad and mom are good. Chris and Elizabeth and Whitney and Lori, everybody's good. Everybody's kids are good. We're populating the world, Peter and Michelle.
I know you guys are. Thank goodness for the Kate clan populating the world.
Thank you.
So I have kind of a basic question, but it's something we haven't covered yet in this interview, and it's really simple in primary season. Why Tom Steyer? Why should someone vote for him? Just can you give us your quick pitch?
Yeah, I mean, first off, I'm a capitalist, and I think that we, as a party, need to remember what actually works. You know, you can, as somebody once said, you can go, we're 0 for 1,000 on socialism, and you can go 0 for 1,001 if you want, but I don't want to be part of it. And I think that Tom is right on the climate. I think it is an emergency. And I think you see more and more data coming out, and more people are frankly coming to that conclusion that we have to do something now. And he's going to do more quicker and more market friendly as far as jobs and other things are concerned than anybody else. I think that he brings a level of competitiveness and experience that nobody else brings when it comes to the economy. And I do think that at the end of the day, Donald Trump will look in the camera and say, you may not like me, you may not like my methods, I may make you angry, sad, disappointed, but at the end of the day, your pocketbook is doing better today than it was 4 years ago. And if you want it to continue, vote for me. If not, vote for a socialist.
I think that's a pretty good argument, and I think that's a good place to leave this. We'll let you get back to your good work, and
you keep surging out there, buddy.
Yeah,
keep
surging. Keep that Steyer surge going.
Always be surging.
All right, see you, buddy.
Bye.
Predicted is like the stock market for all things politics. Instead of trading stock and companies, you're investing money into your opinions on everything from election results to when and if the House will vote to impeach and how many times President Trump will tweet this week. It's easy and only costs a few bucks to get started. He Said, She Said listeners can get a special introductory offer by visiting predicted.org/promo/FLAPOL. Try it today.
I love this podcast so much because it is, we brand it as political, and it's just...
It's not. It's both.
It's hanging out with Peter and Michelle.
It's entry level. Like, it's, you know, it's not entry level. It's politics you can tolerate.
Did you
just call
us base?
Nope, I'm not calling us base. Thank you. We're not basic, even though I love Stassi.
How many more days of dry January do we have?
I don't know.
Are you proud of me for getting through?
I'm very proud of
this weekend. Honestly, like, I'll just tell a really quick story. I'm in dry January, allegedly. There have been a couple of exceptions, but Saturday night, there's not much to do after the horse show winds down and you're in the villages, so there's really nothing to do. Michelle and another parent, they're going to have some pizza with the kids. I'm like, what do I do for the next 3 hours on a Saturday night? So I'm going to go get Michelle wine and Coco
wine.
And so I
because as much as we were in dry January, my whole body hurt and
you needed. Oh, there's no doubt.
First of all, to be clear, the horse smashed my foot that day.
And
twice.
So I literally pulled into the parking lot at Longhorn Steakhouse. I was like, I'm going to get myself a dirty. And I pulled out. And I drove around and out back and didn't go in. And then I got myself vodka and Bloody Mary mix.
And he did not make himself a drink. And we left the bottle of vodka at the hotel when we checked out.
And then when I got home last night, I could have easily...
You could have easily gone dark. You could have had like a dark night like when Bourdain died.
It could have been
Kobe.
Dark Bear.
And instead... You didn't drink, so it wasn't as bad.
So I'm feeling pretty good about it not being.
Yeah, I'm, you know, we'll see. we might just stay sober curious.
I think that's what I'm going to be, is sober curious. I definitely can see the value. Now it's actually made my, like, go out for a drink.
It means
much,
something now.
As opposed to, like, let's just pound six drinks, which is what I would do. Now it's like if I go have a martini or a happy hour with somebody, it's going to actually mean something. So. David Johnson, I'm looking for you on Wednesday night. Are we still in dry? Last day of dry January. Can it end early? We do have Iowa caucus, as we talked about. Speaking of who was just calling me, I got to punch that out, David Johnson. Who, if you were in one of those small towns in Iowa, in the 99 counties.
And someone has knocked on my door 100 times. Wait, if I was in Iowa... And I was a Republican super voter who had just changed my party registration to Democrat the past year. How many times do you think I would have got contacted by all the various campaigns?
700.
I mean, right? Because it's like, I'm like wide open.
You're
there.
Begging to vote.
I'm literally begging
to vote.
Yeah. So it's
I would never let anybody know who I was voting for up in that. Until
the
very end.
I would be like, keep courting me. Keep courting me. Like, how do I become like a caucus? Like, how do I become like in charge of like my caucus?
And there's so many weird rules. Like, you have to get 15% to get it for any of it to count. And so it's very who would you be voting for? Who would you be voting for right now? There's only, I think, 8 people still really in it.
Yeah. I mean, I am leaning towards Bloomberg at the moment, but it's a toss up for me between Bloomberg and Biden.
Got it.
For me, it is all about the end game. Although, you know, it's between Bloomberg or Biden. I don't know exactly which way I want to go there, but I lean Bloomberg, but I think Biden maybe has a more realistic shot. So I'm kind of conflicted there. Who would you go for?
I would vote right now for Andrew Yang.
Andrew Yang, I also got votes. Andrew Yang is my number three.
The Yang gang. So number one, I would vote against Bernie Sanders. Like, I would.
Anybody but Bernie.
I would cross off his name. The fact that he is leading in the poll because Warren is collapsing in Iowa scares the shit out of me for the Democrats, because they're just going to give it to a socialist, as Kevin Kate just basically you know, talked about. They're insane. All the Bernie bros and like, oh, I love all the people that are like, oh, we've never done it this way before, so let's do it. I'm like, oh my God.
Do it. And Donald Trump's getting reelected by a landslide.
Right. Like, he will lose Florida by 15 points. Like,
I mean, it won't there even is be no close. Universe I will ever vote for Bernie Sanders.
No. I
might leave President blank. Like, I might go vote in that election and I might not fill in the bubble. I might undervote presidential. Yeah, sure. Because I don't know that I can bring myself to vote for Donald Trump, but I will. But I might bring myself to vote for Donald Trump if I was afraid that I thought Bernie Sanders was going to win. Because I will take a Donald Trump presidency over a Bernie Sanders presidency every day.
I think if I was voting right now, if I was in Iowa voting, I would probably vote for Elizabeth Warren. I think there's
do like Elizabeth Warren.
I do. I think she's the smartest person in that. Well, no, Bloomberg's pretty damn smart.
Elizabeth Warren is too much of a socialist for me. I am not a socialist.
I don't know that I'd be voting for Biden at this point.
I know.
He's really like
Biden doesn't give me a reason to vote for him
other than him being Biden.
And that I think he could win.
Yeah. Like if he becomes a nominee, I got no problem with
that. I'll be there all day long. But if I'm being an idealist, I really think Bloomberg is where I am.
And that's why I'm saying Iowa, you don't even have to, he's not even running there. So I wouldn't even be voting for him.
Right.
I'd probably vote for Warren.
Yang.
Yang number two.
That's who I'd vote for in Iowa is Yang.
And if I am in Florida, if I'm casting my absentee ballot, like right now, I'm absolutely voting for Bloomberg. Number one, I just want to see Bloomberg stay in the race.
Yeah.
I mean, it's better for the political consulting world. It's better for our friends. And so I would vote for Bloomberg right now. Plus, again, as I've said before, I lived in New York under his leadership. And it's like, just as you know how bad a Senator Marco Rubio is by what it was like to be under him as Speaker, I know what it's like to have lived under a Bloomberg. And the reason why I wanted to bring you to New York City for our honeymoon was that was the New York that he had helped build.
Right.
It was still glorious. And so I would want to do that. So
all I know for sure about the Iowa caucuses is the fine folks of Iowa are not going to select someone that I would ever vote for president. That's what I'm pretty certain of.
What else do we have? We haven't even really gotten
into what?
Florida.
No, we haven't gotten into Florida. What's on tap this week for legislative session?
I'll put it this way. And we don't have to go into it. We'll dive deep again. You're in the third or fourth week. It's not the bills are dying. We're not at the bills are dying stage. Everything is still shaking out. And so we'll know more probably in about another week or so about bills that are like
okay,
finally done and what bills are really going forward. There is a lot going on. There are 50 committee meetings over the next couple of days, and we'll see where, you know, what bills have been TP'd or we thought there was support for them and they just never got across. That'll be interesting where some of the compromises, but right now, we're basically in the same position we were at the beginning of session. Not a lot has changed from that part, you know, that we were at. Galvano is still strong. Oliva is still strong. DeSantis is. They're all kind of stuck to their positions. We'll see kind of what breaks down over the next couple of, I would say the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, I feel like it's still a little bit too congenial. I'm waiting
for. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, we have to see somebody take a whack at somebody's priority. I
mean, someone's going to have to hear soon.
And I guess it'll be how much money gets there for the teacher salaries, you know, again, it is kind of surprising to me. One of the traits that I haven't liked compared to legislative sessions past, one thing I think Weatherford and Gates did this, you have a few bills jazzed up for the first couple of days of session, an ethics bill.
Right.
Some sort of do-goodery bill. I think the first thing that will probably move is Chris Sproul's bill on the 23andMe DNA testing. That'll pass out of the House probably on Wednesday. We'll see if the Senate takes it up. That'll be kind of an interesting thing. Will they take it up, or will they hold the Senate Speaker designate's top priority hostage? Are they going to give him an easy win, or are they going to hold that off? That'll kind of give us an idea about the mood of this session. So we'll come back next week, and we'll drag in some of our friends and talk to them about that.
Yeah, we need next week. We'll dive more deep into Florida's legislative session.
Okay. Well, I think we had an incredible weekend.
We did.
Even
and if
though,
you like talk about horse shows and politics, give us a 5-star review.
If you like talking about basketball, horse shows, Disney cruises, and a little bit of politics mixed in, he said, she said, I'll be your
podcast to go to. So click, you know, subscribe and give us a 5-star review if you are so inclined. We haven't really been making the push for people to do that, and it really does matter. It does help us populate more in people's feeds, which is how people find us.
Thank you to our guests, Jimmy Miller, James Miller, and Kevin Kate. And thank you for your listening.